You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
To the midside, where we're so focused on showing you how to be an individualistic, independent thinker that we're probably about to lose half our audience. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you're still around after this episode, can you please let us know by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes or telling a friend about how much you appreciate our integrity by sticking to our mind's conclusions? Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, recording on the final Father's Day where he is not a father, Daniel T. Richards.
Yes, there's an old joke that my grandfather used to tell, which is, what is Mother's Day without presents? It's Father's Day. So I don't expect that Father's Day in the future will be all the different from all the Father's Days I've experienced in the past.
That's just toxic masculinity, Daniel. That's because you and your former patriarchs could not express emotion towards each other.
Yeah, I guess that's it. Or that culture doesn't really give a shit about fathers. But, you know, either one. I'm sort of super excited to be a father, of course. And, of course, to reap all the benefits that Father's Day bring, including going to lunch on Father's Day and having waitresses make jokes about being someone's daddy, as happened today when we went out to lunch, except that it was at a restaurant that catered to gay men, so it had a very different vibe to the joke than I expected it to have. So, yeah, that's all I have. I have no more Father's Day commentary. I'm not sure how much, you know, blood you wanted to wring out of this stone.
Well, you can already tell that you're ready to be a dad based on that story because you're so disconnected from the youth that you don't know all about people who are romantically involved with other people calling the other person daddy as part of the sexualization of the relationship.
That sounds creepy and something that would require therapy. I don't know. Maybe we can get William to give us some insight. I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And as you just mentioned, joining us from Dale's lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his gay white male privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. Well, I had a little bit of a awkward moment this morning. You know, I have two other roommates, and one's my best friend and business partner and tons of adventures. I'm the only one that had a father to call. So that was very weird. So I was the only one. I felt really awkward. Felt like I had to hide in my room to call my dad on Father's Day. So maybe that's another privilege I have on my list I need to check, is that I still have a father.
It's true. You and your not bastard son relationship.
Yeah.
Right. Right. That's been said already, hasn't it? That having a full family is a privilege that everyone should have. And that it's not fair if you have that full privilege. Wasn't it like, don't read to your kids because that's a privilege that they have?
Daniel, you better not read to your kid.
Done.
How dare
and done.
You privilege them?
That's what.
Maybe
the
you can only
for,
read
right?
half a book though, so that you can you know, because you don't want to give them, you only want to give them half of a privilege, right? You know, the white privilege.
He gets
thing.
All beginnings, yeah. No endings. Yeah. Of books. Yeah.
Well, I think your son's only going to be 25% privileged, right? Because half Pakistani, a quarter Mexican, a quarter white.
True.
So only a quarter true. Of books. Probably. That's going to be really confusing for the child.
That's right. It's going to be very confusing when I literally take all his books and rip them in quarters and throw 3/4 of it away. That's going to need some therapy later on.
Well, I have a question about something else that might need some therapy. You might need some therapy about. So we got the World Cup going on right now. I know most people who listen to this show and you probably aren't paying attention to it, but something interesting happened that I wanted to get your opinion on as a half Mexican, Daniel. Mm. Former U.S. national team captain Landon Donovan filmed a commercial and tweeted about how the U.S. national team is not in the World Cup. And in this commercial, he took off a shirt and had a Mexican shirt on and said, in this World Cup, he is supporting his other team. Now, here's the thing. Mexico is the biggest rival of the U.S. in CONCACAF, their same region. And this is like, to me, ignoring the political issues. This is like if a New England Patriots fan was like, oh, yeah, we're not in the playoffs, but we're supporting our other team, the New York Jets. So Daniel, will you be supporting your other team, Mexico, in the World Cup?
Is the World Cup the hockey trophy? Or... No, I'm just kidding. Although I don't care about soccer.
All right,
soccer.
God damn it. In the news this week...
No, I got it.
Have,
I got
so
it,
let's
I
just...
Got it. I'm just messing with you. And it worked really well. Excellent. No. So there is this debate in sports ball, right? To use a phrase that you love, Justin, about if you're supposed to root for the team coming from your side, quote unquote, your conference, your division, whatever, or if you're supposed to root against that team because you don't want to see glory. I've never been one of these people who felt like I had to have like divisional patriotism, basically divisional, like I had to have some sort of emotional connection to the division my team comes from or the conference my team comes from. I only want my team to win. After that, I honestly don't care. There are people I root for. So like if the Patriots didn't make the Super Bowl, but the Texans did, I might root for Deshaun Watson to do really well, but I don't care if the Texans would win per se. So I don't really get it. Also, just stop rooting for soccer teams and problem solved.
Well, I'm a little...
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same
as
you.
I'm a little salty because as we're recording this, Germany lost. And Germany's my team. I don't even cheer for the USA team.
Does that mean Germany is out?
The irony of this is Germany lost to Mexico.
Yeah.
Oh. Does that mean they're out? Is it like a single elimination tournament?
No, the group matches have three matches, I think, but Justin might know more than me. I get super confused until they get down to the more tournament style.
So the first round, there's four teams per group, and there's a round robin, so you play the other three. Then the top two teams from each group move on to an elimination style playoff.
I see. Great.
So it's a lot of soccer.
That is a lot of soccer.
I'm with you. Yeah, you know how crazy I was when I was a kid? I used to watch every game. I would somehow every 4 years not have a job. I think I was doing it subconsciously, and I would watch every game.
So my latest number I saw showed that because of increased satellite TV, there's going to be 3.5 billion viewers of soccer during the World Cup. Do you know how many Mexicans that is? It's like 3.75 billion Mexicans.
That's actually part of the controversy because apparently Europe is having better results than South America and Central America in the tournament. So people are like, oh my God, this isn't what's supposed to happen. Blah, blah, blah.
Racism.
Because somehow we decided Hispanics are better at soccer for some reason.
I don't understand America. Any of it. I don't know why we're talking about it. I feel like a snotty, American, entitled, privileged, white guy who doesn't care.
Well, I'm sure this is riveting our very vast and wide international audience.
I'm sure the Canadians are just loving it over here. Yeah. Midsider Mark has his little maple leaf flag. Are they in the tournament? I don't even know. Does Canada have a national team?
Yeah, they're terrible, though.
I thought they would just get lumped in with
They have hockey. Leave them alone.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. The reason we're talking about it is this is a big deal in the world right now. It's captivating the world. And also, I just think it's really ignorant that it's Landon Donovan used to play for the U.S. team, and now he's filming commercials saying he's supporting his biggest rival. It's not like he's like randomly, you know, in the U.S. and that means he doesn't have to cheer for anyone else. No, cheer for who you want, I guess. I would say cheer for the U.S., but it's worse because he played for the U.S. and now he's saying
it would be like if Tom Brady made a commercial rooting for the Jets when they make the Super Bowl after he retires.
That's 100% what it's like, except if Tom Brady sucked.
Gotcha. Now I'm in. Man, how are people going to stand it watching all that soccer when there's going to be collectively three goals scored in the entire tournament? So,
yeah, Germany, Mexico, it was 1-0. I'm sure that would have riveted you.
Riveting.
All right. So now we've pissed off our international audience. Do you want to piss off our objectivist audience?
I can't wait.
Let's do it.
It's time for the news with Daniel T. Richards. Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad.
These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad. Trump, North Korea, Trump. It's all over, everywhere. You can't escape it. It's on all the news channels. It's on all the blogs. It's on all the social medias. It's the only thing anyone is talking about, including all objectivists on social media. We won't get to that part yet, but let's just talk about the story in general. To throw a bit of a bone, though, here's a story from Time Magazine critiquing the president, perhaps rightfully so. We'll get into it. The title of this story is, "A Lot of People Have Done Bad Things." President Trump downplays North Korea's human rights abuses. Responding to concerns at his first face-to-face meeting with Kim Jong-un glossed over the North Korean leader's human rights record, President Donald Trump on Wednesday night downplayed allegations of the regime's brutality. In an interview on Fox News' Brett Baer on Air Force One, he was leaving Singapore. Trump brushed aside Kim Jong-un's oppression of his people, saying, quote, "Yeah, but so have a lot of other people have done really bad things," Trump said, adding, "I mean, I could go through a lot of nations where a lot of bad things were done." Angela Merkel right now putting her face in her palm. Trump went on to praise Kim, calling him a tough guy who took control of his country from a young age. Quote, "I don't care who you are, what kind of advantage you have," Trump said. "If you can do that at 27 years old, I mean, that's one in 10,000 that can do that." Throughout the interview, Trump called Kim, who he previously called Little Rocket Man, a very smart guy and a great negotiator. So, Justin, should Trump be talking with, negotiating with, quote-unquote, giving legitimacy to Kim Jong-un?
So we're going with the later already? We're just skipping to the later right now?
Well, I mean, do you want to talk about, I mean, this whole, you know, if he says nice things about him, I think is all part of the legitimacy question, which is a complicated question, but one I have strong feelings about. So I thought we'd just dive into the meat of the issue and not dance around it anymore.
Okay, then. So, objectivists, it was nice having you listen to the show. I don't have a problem with Trump doing this. The reason I don't have a problem with Trump doing this is, what is the alternative? So the alternative is just let them continue to try to develop nuclear weapons and then one day maybe fire one at us and kill a shitload of our people. Alternately, we go in and we start a war and a bunch of our soldiers die, a bunch of their innocent civilians die. So those are the two alternatives. A bunch of people die on either way. This way, people are already dying. And Trump is using his manipulative, I want to be clear about that, Trump is being manipulative, business tactics to try and get this dictator to denuclearize. Now, I understand the argument that you can't trust him because he's a brutal dictator. But this is where I have a question, and this is just what I pontificate on and I wonder about. It's clear Trump is trying to play on this guy's youth and naivete. Right, we don't know how old Kim Jong Un is. Right,
yeah, he's 30-ish.
Right, yeah. So he's our age or a little younger. Yeah. I would say. I think he's probably a little younger. He looks like a fat guy who looks like the Korean Augustus Gloop is what he looks like to me.
Yes, he looks like a baby Stave Puff Marshmallow Man to me.
Yeah, exactly. Except the knockoff Korean version. Right. So Trump is playing on that. All these things he's saying, Trump does not really mean when he's like, oh, a lot of people have done bad things. Oh, what else did he say nice about him? They have a beautiful country or shit like that.
He loves his country. He's a talented man. He's a good negotiator. You know, He's a tough guy. I think at one point he said, when Kim Jong-un stands, his people stand at attention. I could really use that in this country. You know, that kind of stuff.
Right. So he is not saying that. Everyone seems to think he's saying that for our benefit or everyone else's benefit. Everyone's like, oh, man, he's saying that for the world. No, he's saying that for Kim Jong-un. He's trying to butter him up. Because think about it this way. To piss off objectivists even more, here comes some psychologizing.
Yeah.
You're Kim Jong-un. You're born into this brutal dictatorship, and your dad is a dictator. And he goes, when I die, you're going to become a dictator, too. And it's all you know. You don't know any different. You think that's just the way to be. Then Donald Trump comes in and starts saying all this stuff to you, and it makes you not feel as bad. And suddenly you have an ally who can help you get out of this shitty situation that you were born into. The reason I'm saying this is I think this is the angle Trump is playing. And I think playing this angle isn't going to make anything worse than it already is. Worst case scenario, this is like a movie, right? Worst case scenario, you reach out to the shut-in, they start coming out, and then all of a sudden they get scared and go back in. How many movies have we seen with that plot where the shut-in comes out, gets scared in Act 2, and then Act 3, they finally come out into the world and they trust you and they change their life? We're currently in Act 1. And worst case scenario, Act 3 is he just goes back in there and stays in there, and we're just back to the stalemate we were at before. But Trump's shooting his shot, right? We always say, shoot your shot.
Do we?
And that's why I don't have a problem with this, because the other shot he could shoot is a fucking missile and start a war and lots of people die. So for me, where the only options are people die versus maybe this can make a change, I say at least Trump is using his powers for trying to do good.
William, does this give quote-unquote legitimacy to a two-bit dictator? And if so, what does that mean? Because I have no idea.
I think we're all in some sort of weird, bizarro world of Trump derangement syndrome with the media and this whole action. And I think even, like you said, like you guys pointed out, some objectivists are falling into this trap of Trump derangement syndrome. I have an article here. We covered it on the show, or one similar to it on the show, from October 1st, 2017. No Laughing Matter, Why Trump's Words on North Korea Matter. This is from The New Yorker. Here in the entire article, they talk about how it's so bad that Trump is making this personal. Quote, Trump's personalization of the conflict has introduced a new playbook that seems almost perfectly engineered to trigger Kim's paranoia and animosity. If you remember, Trump, after Trump's UN speech, Kim Jong-un called Trump mentally deranged U.S. dotard, right? And then this whole article talks about how dare us insult Kim Jong-un personally, right? And that this is going to lead to nuclear war. Now, Trump is following this advice and praising the dictator. And he's being told that this will also lead to nuclear war and legitimizing a dictator. We can't have it both ways, people. What's the standard that we're trying to measure Trump with? Now, Trump is a terrible president, and he's a known liar. This is not me defending Trump. I did not vote for Trump. But we need to be objective about this here. This is a negotiation tactic that works. If you guys are interested, and people on the show are interested, there's a book that I really enjoyed. I learned a lot from, called The Dictator's Handbook, Why Bad Behavior is Almost Always Good Politics. The book is amazing. It really explains a lot of the quote-unquote irrational behavior we see from dictators. And, you know, Kim's hold on this country is tenuous. The smaller number of people that make up the political system, the more unstable it is and the more tightly controlled it has to be. So stoking his fears, and I'm not saying Trump did this on purpose, by the way, but stoking his fears and putting him in positions where he's being insulted was a way to weaken him among his few key leaders in his country. And now he's giving him the opportunity to look good, look powerful, and do the right thing. That's the way you deal with these sort of dictators. Now, will it work? I don't know. There's so many things that have to do with internal to North Korea that we don't understand or know that will make more of a difference. And the Dictator's Handbook goes into why these things happen. It's more about the internal struggles than the external struggles. The internal struggles are what are driving the external conflicts.
So here, yes.
Well, and the internal struggles of a guy who was raised basically as a prisoner, right? Kim Jong-un. We have no idea what his psychology is, so we have no idea what he's going to do.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Let's look at the context. Where I think while I respect all the objectivists and I sort of get the notion of not wanting to give quote-unquote legitimacy to evil, I understand that. Don't negotiate with evil. Whatever.
Can I ask something about that I think you hinted at?
What?
Is there anything more legitimate than when you're already killing your own people?
Well, like, that's part of it, right?
How is us saying like anything going to change the fact that he's already dicking over his entire country? Like, that's the reality of it.
And that's part of it is the quote-unquote giving legitimacy angle, right? Which is, you know what gives legitimacy to a quote-unquote two-bit dictator? Having a nuclear weapon. Being able to obliterate in one fell swoop, an incredible ally in South Korea. And by the way, thousands and thousands of our own troops who are in that region. So,
right. I mean, did we ever give legitimacy to Hitler, or did he just start fucking killing everyone?
Well, the thing about, look, it's, there's, the, I think a better direct analogy is Soviet Russia or communist China. And how we dealt with them. We didn't invade either of those. We didn't conquer them. We sort of maneuvered our way into being trade partners with them. And eventually, through prosperity, communism collapsed to some degree. In China, it's sort of teetering on this weird balance. But you have to unequivocally admit that their people are far freer than they were when Nixon first opened negotiations with China, which he was soundly trounced for, by the way, at the time. Or look at the USSR and our Cold War against them and opening up relationships with them and Reagan's strong rhetoric about tearing down this wall, which, by the way, at the time was said would lead to nuclear war with Russia. You have to, if you're not willing to go in and sacrifice tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of American lives to stop what's going on in that region, plus they're an existential threat, i.e. they have nuclear weapons that could eventually reach us, then the only other tactic you have is some form of negotiation. That's it. There are no other options. Tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of Americans die eventually, or you try some form of negotiating. What else is there?
And I just
there's
wanna,
nothing, objectivists.
I want to circle back. Are we forgetting the UN speech? Trump gave a great speech and called out all the evils of North Korea there. It's not like that went away by him buttering up a dictator for negotiations, right? Like, that doesn't erase that. He's not giving a moral sanction to this guy. Now, he's getting pretty close. We can criticize the words he's using, right? But the technique is not something I'm going to criticize.
No, I'm not either, because I'm not willing to give up my life or the life of the servicemen of the United States to attempt to stop this guy in an armed conflict. It's not worth it. It is a threat, but it's a threat that's not worth death over. So let's see if this works. Will it work? I have no idea, and neither does anyone else. Objectivist, non-objectivist, otherwise has no idea. We've tried this appeasement policy for generations, basically since the 50s. It hasn't worked. Appeasement / sanctions / ignoring them. Now we're actually inviting them to come into the world community. Who knows if it's going to work? I don't know if it's going to work. One of the key things that I keep thinking about is the idea that not everyone acts in their direct rational self-interest. And especially people who were raised in this backwards, bizarro culture where they're a demigod and they're going to have absolute power. How could you possibly be rational in that culture? So that being said, we don't know what's going to work with him because he's not a rational actor. When Trump tweets out things like, I have a bigger button than Kim Jong-un, and we go, oh my God, that's the stupidest thing I could possibly imagine. To us, because we're rational actors. He is not. We have no idea. That might have worked. He might have went, oh my God, they do have more weapons. I never thought of it that way. I could be obliterated tomorrow. and then wanted to go into this stupid negotiating.
Yeah, one of the key things they talk about in that the Dictator's Handbook is that you have key folks under you that hold the power, right? You can't do things as a lone dictator yourself, right? Think of like key military leaders, key enforcement mechanisms, where the money comes from, those sort of things. So doing something like that kind of standoff that he did could scare those folks into being open to actions that would otherwise be seen as weak actions by the dictator. And that's exactly what happened. Now, again, whether Trump planned this or not, whether he's doing this for the right reasons, the wrong reasons, those are all things that are way outside of the scope of discussion here. We're just dealing with what's happening. And dealing with what's happening, like I wouldn't go so far as to say that dictators aren't acting rationally in a sense of their long-term self-interest, but they have reasons for the things that they're doing. And because this is such a closed society, and it's not like we have spies that are collecting data on these key figures. We probably barely even know who they are. So we have to guess at what their touch points are, because they have, you know, each key person to Kim Jong-un has their own key people, right, that are looking to kill them and take their place. So there's a whole there's a whole bunch of stuff that we don't see internal to North Korea, and all we can do is look from the outside and see what's going to work and what's not going to work.
And the last thing I'll say, Justin, maybe you can respond to this point in particular, is for the people out there who say it is worth it for there to be military intervention, it is worth it for us to sacrifice tens of thousands of American lives to stop this guy, and maybe hundreds of thousands of lives and hundreds of thousands of South Korean lives. Regardless, if you think it's worth it, where in recent history, I'm talking post-World War II, where has that worked out in the world? Nowhere. It hasn't worked out in Korea. It hasn't worked out in Vietnam. It didn't work out in the Middle East anywhere. We deposed Saddam Hussein. That region of the world is totally destabilized and a more of an existential threat than it was before. We deposed more recently Gaddafi, and that's become an ISIS stronghold in Libya, in a place where slavery is back in practice. So well done there, deposing a brutal dictator. It doesn't work. At least the way it could be enacted. I'm not saying in an ideal military situation, but in the ways it could be enacted in modern culture, it doesn't work. It just makes things worse. I don't know. I feel like a hippie. This is the hippiest I've ever been, I think. I'm usually a hawk on these sorts of things, but
that was exactly my thought too. I was like, man, I gotta talk to William because I think I've watched too much Star Trek where they're like, if we lose even one life, it's unacceptable. But that's kind of how I feel like right now. And I was like, did the liberalism or the leftism in Star Trek finally get to me?
Yeah, I don't know. On this particular issue, North Korea is such a cluster of bad foreign policy since the 50s that I think trying anything different is what we should do. Attempting anything other than what we have been doing that is just short of having a full-scale invasion is something. I'm not opposed to it outright.
Well,
and that's
what I don't like
about the conversation around objectivists is they're opposed to it outright.
Let me demonstrate I feel what you guys are saying. Like we're starting to sound like doves. Let me remind everyone how hawkish some of us can be. If North Korea, even accidentally, fires a missile into Japan or South Korea or any of our allies, we should delete them. No matter the cost to South Korea. I want to be super clear on that.
Did you just quote Matt Hardy from the WWE? Delete, 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 delete. Is that what you just did?
Yeah. We say that a lot in the hacker circles. Delete someone or delete something.
That must have been where he got that from.
But I want to be clear that this is not, I'm not joking here. Like I mean that really seriously, right? Like if he takes aggressive action, you meet that with aggressive action. And I don't mean, you know, exercises or that sort of thing, or slowly escalating. That's a different situation, right? We're talking if he's firing a nuclear missile somewhere, or even a missile that could be nuclear, you just take out the government. Now, I'm not saying you make it a sheet of glass, right? You just take out everything, all of their military. You take it all out. And then you say, you figure it out, right? You can't have these toys anymore.
That's right.
William, you've just written the funniest twist for this Trump Kim Jong-un reality show. So Trump sends over like a box of Twinkies to Kim Jong-un to be like, see how good America is? And Un is eating the Twinkies and accidentally sits on the button to launch a missile. And is like,
because it's
oh,
so small.
Shit.
Yeah, because it's so small. The button.
Yeah, because it's so small, he doesn't even see it. And that's the thing. Like, that's why I am okay with everything Trump is doing right now, because I think he's recognized the unique situation where, William, we're talking about, you know, when you're a dictator, you're surrounded by all of these people. Isn't it likely that all of the people that Kim Jong-un is surrounded by are older than him and are trying to pull him in different directions and are more manipulative than him and understand how all of this works better? So Trump is basically acting as an ally. He's acting as a father figure for Kim Jong-un, and he's trying to use that to manipulate him to get it to be to the US's or the world's favor, whichever way you want to see he's pushing it. But that's what he's trying to do. I mean, to me, Kim Jong-un is basically the Korean Angels in the outfield right now. Joseph Gordon-Levitt somehow ends up in the Angels dugout around all of these adult men, and you have no idea what's going on because he delusional believes there are angels from God telling him that he deserves to run this team.
I'm surprised and you Trump... even had to say it, Justin. It's such a cliche at this point.
And I think Trump recognizes that. He's just fucking with the guy's head because of it. And is there a better person in the world to try to attempt a hostile takeover of another country by fucking with that person's head than Donald Trump?
It's really a match made in absolute bizarro heaven.
It's a reality show. Did you see the video where Trump like was saying stuff and they cut to Kim Jong-un and he's just looking around awkwardly like, what the fuck is going on? Yes.
Trump, could you set up the camera so we look nice and thin? We need to look nice and thin. And then Kim Jong-un's face is like, what's going on right now? Yeah. And for anyone who does want to laugh at Trump a little bit, and deservedly so, I think, watch the video that Trump's team made for the summit for Kim Jong-un that is basically a fake movie trailer that's like, coming this summer, a man with the opportunity to bring peace to a peninsula. It's literally a fake movie trailer, and it says starring Kim Jong-un and starring Donald Trump. It is the most
it's hilarious.
Insane thing I've ever seen come out of a State Department in history.
But that's how he's trying to fuck with him. That's what I'm saying. Do you see how he's trying to make him feel important?
No,
like
I,
he's the one who matters.
I
which
get it.
Flies in the face of what William's saying.
I get it. I get the strategy. That doesn't make it any less absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, because that video was like, did you ever see Barney Stinson's video resume on How I Met Your Mother? That's what that video was like.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you for sticking with it, objectivists. I get it. Like, we get your arguments. We disagree respectfully and hope you'll continue to listen, even though we've turned into big old hippies.
Nah, I don't respectfully disagree.
You never respectfully disagree.
No. Nope.
If someone says they like chocolate over vanilla, you're like, you're evil. Yeah.
I don't know. What's with these people with the twist cones? Everyone wants to mix. I say we have separate but equal chocolate and vanilla.
Pick a side. The center is always evil. That's right. All right. Speaking of hippies, Harvard is really desperately trying to prop up their discrimination policy against Asian Americans. So for all of you who don't know.
Really? You didn't even say speaking of Asians. I gave you that transition and you didn't take it.
No. No. Speaking of Asians, now back to what
there
I was
you go.
Doing.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
For all of you who don't know, Harvard is being sued over their admissions policies, which the lawsuit alleges discriminates against Asian Americans. Essentially, it works like this. There are way more qualified Asian Americans who apply to Harvard than who actually get in for candidates who are less qualified, and this usually means has a lower... what's the SAT score, worst grades, etc. And Harvard uses something they call a holistic admissions process, which looks at many factors for diversity, among which is race. So in a letter to alumni and friends this week, Drew Faust, president of Harvard University, said they were essentially committed to this policy from the letter. Quote, year after year, Harvard brings together a community that is the most varied and diverse that any of us is likely ever to encounter. Harvard students benefit from working and living alongside people of different backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives as they prepare for the complex world that awaits them and their considerable talents. So Powerline blog points out in commentary here, is Harvard saying that if they didn't prefer some ethnic groups over others, its students wouldn't encounter, quote, people of different backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives? Is skin color really a background experience or perspective, let alone a decisively important one? Which is really the point here, right? Which is really the whole thing about diversity. Justin, isn't diversity, if it's to be a virtue, diversity of ideas, and skin color doesn't correlate with that. And in fact, saying that it does is kind of racist, right?
That's actually something when I was at Ithaca that we used to talk about, that people would be complaining about the racial diversity and how there wasn't diversity on campus. But then they did a study of how all the professors voted at Ithaca, and they were resoundingly left-wing, either Democratic or Green Party. And they said, what about intellectual diversity, which no one really took kindly to. This whole issue is so muddled because of collectivism that it's insane. Harvard's a private school, correct?
Yes.
It's not a public university.
Right.
So if they want to say, we don't like that you wear the color blue, so you can't come to our university because we don't want people who wear the color blue, they can use that as an admission standard. They can have a question on their application. Have you ever worn the color blue? They have every right to do that. They can decide they want to put their student body together based upon any reason they want. They want to provide the best education. They get to decide what the best education is. I don't know where people got this idea that test scores were the only thing that mattered for best education.
Yeah.
Right? You're the smartest kid because you have the best test scores and the best grade. Is that really going to provide you the best education? Not necessarily. But beyond that, Harvard is recognizing that. But then they apply that to a collectivistic standard where they say, oh, well, based upon that, we're going to use race to decide that. That's twisted that race gets involved. So the whole thing gets messed up because Harvard's operating off of one good principle and one terrible evil principle. And in the middle, you get that and you get insanity.
Yeah. William, what do you think about the argument that I've heard recently and only recently that it's actually a net negative for students to be let into universities based even in some degree on their skin because they basically underperform what they could do at other universities and end up at the bottom of their classes and essentially unhirable at that point?
Yeah, I think there's a lot to that. I know it was 100 years ago when I was an undergrad, but I definitely saw that at Michigan. And I'll detail that in a second. But first, I wanted to tell Justin, I think you're absolutely right that that Harvard being private, they should be able to do whatever the fuck they want with their admissions policy. Unfortunately, I think race is a protected class.
You should say that more often.
Race is a protected class, probably in
it is.
In yeah, so therefore it would be illegal if they discriminated based on it. So that's kind of the situation we're in now. So when I was an undergrad, I actually was a diversity admission at Michigan under the illegal unconstitutional point system. I got as many points on my admission scorecard for being from a rural underrepresented county in Michigan as someone who would be black from Detroit. Now, I don't think that hurt me because I was, I think, number three in my class in my high school or something, small high school. And you could make a pretty good argument, like, hey, if this is a state institution funded by state dollars, then they better have people from all over the state attend, right? You could make that argument. I don't feel too terrible about that, although I think there's better ways to do it. But I think, Justin, you hit the nail on the head with this. This is about treating people as individuals and drawing conclusions on people's character and suitableness for fitting into a culture and education based on race is exactly racism. It's exactly racism. I get offended is the wrong word. I get giggles every time people draw conclusions on me based on the fact that I'm white, that I'm gay. People draw tons of conclusions from me based on those things, and it's always hilarious to me. Like they immediately jump to all these conclusions, and rather than, it's not just that they jump to these conclusions, it's that when faced with the fact that I'm different in those ways that they don't expect, instead of being like, oh, that's cool, and like kind of moving on, because there's an aspect of like sort of like naive stereotyping, which is pretty much what you do in the world anyway, right? To being almost offended that I don't represent my identity, quote unquote. And that's what I see throughout this article. This, like you said, this like frozen, this frozen identity of what it means to be whatever, Asian, black, whatever ethnic group they're discriminated against or discriminating in favor of. There's all these attributes assigned to them that don't match the particulars, right? I guarantee you, there are very few, if any, inner city Chicago or East St. Louis attendees at Harvard. Right? And that's the stereotype that they want you to think, that they're letting in all these people from East St. Louis, all these poor black kids from East St. Louis going to Harvard, so they're going to sacrifice a few Asians to get that there. That is not what they're doing. And so there's pretension to it.
Well, I think the Asians end up sacrificing themselves once they don't get into Harvard. I think that's when the seppuku happens, because they dishonored their family.
Justin, let's be serious here, though. If colleges didn't discriminate against Asian Americans, wouldn't colleges only be Asian Americans?
Well, right, and that's where the problem comes in when you start using the word discrimination, right? I mean, Dan, haven't you discriminated against every other race of woman by marrying a Pakistani woman?
It's true. Fuck you, white women.
Right. So we're not using these terms as they actually are, because as William just pointed out, everything has become this insane extreme version of collectivism. Yes, people have tendencies that you can figure out because most people are common, and common means you are typically what your group is or what your region is or blah, blah, blah. But when you judge individually, you have to acknowledge that deviations from that exist. And that's why you have discrimination in selection processes. Daniel, let's use the inverse of what I just pointed out. If you thought all Pakistani women were a specific way, wouldn't you have never given your wife a chance?
Of course. I've told this story many a times, but when you were to ask me like things I would never consider in a woman I wanted to marry, first one would be Muslim. And it's not because I don't like individual Muslims, but I don't want to be part of that religion. I don't want to be part of any religion. I wouldn't have married someone who's a devout Catholic either. So when Faiza told me at the beginning of our dating that she was Muslim, I had to really, you know, strongly consider her as an individual. If I had just assumed everyone in that group was exactly the same, I would have been out the most wonderful experience of my life. So you have to judge people individually. You can sort of, like you were saying, you can make sort of generalizations, but every individual person has to be taken account under as a higher order than that generalization, and always, right, no matter what.
It's the difference between thinking in a meta way, abstractly, about people you might meet and situations you might be in, but when you're in that situation and you are immediately seeing evidence to the contrary, that evidence trumps all abstractions and meta thinking you had previously done about that. And that's what you did with your wife. you had all these ideas about Muslim women, about Pakistani women, about those cultures. But the minute you met her, you took her for what she was showing you and not all those other things. And that's the way collectivism has taken over this country. And that's what Harvard's dealing with this article, is people don't allow you to show who you are anymore. They automatically assume, oh, you're a white male. Oh, you have privilege. You've never dealt with the police thinking automatically that you were committing a crime when they pulled you over. You've never dealt with, you know, people assuming you were a bad person when you went to apply for a job, so they didn't give you a chance. And they assume that because you're a white male that you have that privilege, because they're looking at you as the group and not the individual, and not asking you what have your experiences been. And that's what this entire article is about.
Yes. To put it a little succinctly, it is both normal and right to make generalizations, but it is abnormal and immoral to put those generalizations above individuals. Period. Period. So,
yeah, in fact, I'm gonna follow up on that, Daniel, by saying something else. In fact, the ideal world, what you want is you want to meet a human being and then go, wait, you're a lot different than I would have expected, because that means that person has individuated him or herself from his groups and has become a strong person that is going to bring value to your life. You want that. You don't want everybody to be what you expected.
Yeah, and that's another, I want to turn that one more direction before we move on. Also, think about in yourself. You want to make sure that you're not doing what these people are doing and what the social justice warriors do, where their individual identity melts away and all they have is their group identity and those group attributes. You are a person, an individual person. Cultivate your individual differences and your individual values. Don't give yourself up for the group.
Yeah, this is sort of a tangential note, but one of the better political cartoons I've seen recently was a social justice warrior, dark-skinned, talking to a white guy. It looks like on a college campus. And the social justice warrior says to the white guy, "You've never been judged by the color of your skin." And his response is, "I just was." I thought that was a very good cartoon. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I don't know, collectivism, some Google employees are talking about pushing for a brand new kind of workers' union. Mm-hmm. So, for some Google employees, it's not enough that the company pays well, provides free food, and allows them to occasionally nod off in the company's nap pods. Some are now demanding that Google operate within their own ethical guidelines. So said a Google staffer involved in protests that forced the company to promise not to build artificial intelligence tools for the military. In an interview with Jacobin magazine, the Googler indicated that some of those involved in the protest are emboldened by the victory and want to test the limits of their newfound power, maybe as far as a workers' union. Quote, "The success of the campaign shows that when we stick together, we get more done than we go it alone." Some Googlers are even talking about unionization. So the point here would be that Googlers are trying to form a union to have a say in the ethical direction of the company, essentially wanting to collectivize the decisions at the very top, the whole reason being who's going to carry out these orders but the individual workers. So, Justin, does this remind you of anything that maybe we've read in a certain book that's particularly influential by a certain female Russian Jewish atheist author sometime in the past?
It's so funny because in my head right now, I was like, do I make the collectivist point or do I just go Starnesville, move on?
That's what we in the business call a leading question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. To a certain extent, just go read that chapter of Atlas Shrugged, right? Was it chapter 10 of part 1, the Starnesville chapter, where Dagny and Hank go and investigate and learn why Starnesville failed?
Yeah.
Yeah, so just go read that if you want to know what we're talking about. So I don't want to rehash all of that. That's the best thing. You could just read that to understand this. But it really is, this is the collectivism thing we were just talking about. it's not recognizing that the people at the top of the company have a unique thing to bring, and that's why they are in charge of the company. They've created it or they're leading it, which means as part of it, you have to accept their moral and ethical leadership as well. Now, you are, especially if you work for Google, all right? We're not talking about somebody running the cash register at McDonald's where they probably need that job to survive, right? It's take that job or you're on the street. You're probably making pretty good money and you have pretty good savings if you're at Google. You have every choice not to work at that company if you don't like the moral, ethical direction of it. It probably will not harm your life on a huge level, but they're just seeing this collectivistly because they're not thinking that the person at the top has anything unique to bring to the company. So they're saying, why don't we just all run this company? Because that's what it's good. If you have this type of union, you might as well just say, okay, we're all making every decision about this company now. That's all that's going to happen is unions are going to run companies. And, you know, this is how collectivism ends up in Marxism.
Yeah, totally. So William, let me read you a little quote here and ask you a question. Quote, in the past, unions organized primarily around working conditions and compensation, but why not now demand a say in the direction of the company? Sure, in some sense, these are a privileged set of workers, but that doesn't mean they're still not workers. Why should they allow a small group of C-suite executives make these ethical decisions when it has to be implemented by the workers anyway? So, William, what I'm asking you is, can you mine any legitimate point out of what he's saying and just say that what he's going about it, you know, in a way that makes no sense?
I think that he has fallen victim to a false dichotomy. So I got those three words for him. False dichotomy, bro. The reason why is they're drawing a false dichotomy between ethical and moral leadership and business leadership. And I think you guys hit on the point here. It's first that they're saying that the C-suite provides nothing, right? No value, right? There's that underlying premise. But then there's a separate between business and ethics, right? Like in order, like there's this concept of, well, if you're going to be, you can be decent in business, but to be really good, you got to be unethical. And we know that that's false. In order to be really good at business, you have to be supremely ethical. You know, think of Hank to harken back to what we were talking about earlier, right? You have to be extremely moral in order to be good at business. And I think that they're just falling victim to that false dichotomy. They've done it. And the other thing I would say is too, we talked about, Justin, you talked about it. If you don't like the quote unquote ethical or real ethical, moral or business decisions of a company, you have options. You leave. I would even argue even the McDonald's worker has options. Come work for me at Jersey Mike's. You have options. And guess what?
Hey. Go on ZipRecruiter. This isn't your chance to recruit on here.
They have options. And in fact, we've seen that all the conservatives that did not like the culture, the cultural direction brought on by the leadership at Google, they did all leave. And the company is now suffering really because of it.
Here's the ultimate, I'm going to use the term unionization, but it really does not apply. The ultimate, you know, workers group or whatever, which is you and your friends get together and say, we don't like the ethical direction of this company, so we're making our own company. We're going to compete with Google and do it better than them. We're going to be,
Daniel,
we're going to do whatever it is that we have to plus this quote unquote missing ethical piece, end quote.
Daniel, isn't that the entire plot of Silicon Valley?
Yes, it is. Totally.
And speaking of stories that play into this, William, what you're talking about is exactly the difference between pre-Disney Marvel and post-Disney Marvel. If you look at the first two Iron Man movies, don't the first two Iron Man movies drive home the point that Tony Stark is moral and ethical even though people don't think he is? And the fact that he's a good businessman comes from that? You know, everyone's like, oh, he's this evil guy because he makes weapons and blah, blah, blah. But then you see that he creates the Iron Man suit and becomes a superhero and privatizes national defense because of how good of a person he is, which is what allows him to be the billionaire. And then, of course, post-Disney, when Disney took over, they created that split in the character, where the character then became this awful moral person. He's a drunk, and he's a narcissist. And that was his failing is what made him a good business person.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that's why we see in all movies, those businessmen are always evil. There's never a moral businessman. And if they are moral, they're not successful. And that premise is definitely coming out in this story. And I just wanted to touch on one more thing before we move on. Feedback is really important, right? Like being able, having a culture where folks feel like they can talk to leaders in the company is great. I work at a company now where that's true. I can schedule time with the equivalent of our COO and just talk to him if I wanted to, give them feedback on things. But if they don't take action, if I ask them, if I make a suggestion, they don't take action on it, I don't assume it's because they're evil. It's, they get paid to make these decisions, right? And I get paid to tell them what I think. Like that it's a two-way communication street. There could be things that they know that I don't know. And all I can do is give them the data and trust that their position, the organization has been earned and they can make the decisions. And if I don't like it, if it's something that's against my morals, I would leave. I have left jobs, previous jobs, that I didn't like the way that it was being run or the ethics in business. Because for me, there's no distinction between business decisions and ethical decisions. So that's why I keep saying them both. But the ethical decisions that the management's making, I leave.
That's right. Well, speaking of a business that is both ethical and successful, Domino's is repairing roads because governments won't. And some people say it reveals a dystopian truth about America. So Domino's has a new campaign. I think the slogan for the campaign is "Bad roads shouldn't happen to good pizza." And the idea is this. This is a quote from Russell Wiener, president of Domino's USA. Okay. Says, quote, "We don't want to lose any great tasting pizza to a pothole ruining a wonderful meal. Domino's cares too much about its customers and pizza to let that happen. So Domino's is thus far working with a few towns, Bartonville, Texas, Milford, Delaware, Athens, Georgia, and Burbank, California, right in your neck of the woods, kind of, guys, to repair roads and fill potholes, stamping the repairs with a Domino's logo, of course. They're also allowing people to nominate their own towns for road repair, and either Domino's will go to those towns and fix the potholes, or they will give money to the local government to fix the potholes. So, Justin, this is an ultimate libertarian troll if I've ever seen one, because the sort of joke question that libertarians throw around all the time from pro-government advocates when we talk about privatizing everything is, but who will build the roads? And I guess the answer is Domino's. So, Justin, does this mean you're going to have to start buying Domino's pizza?
Well, to be clear, they're not fixing the potholes with pizza, right? They're actually using asphalt.
It's unclear from the photo.
It is unclear. they're using asphalt, but some could argue that the pizzas deserve to be in the potholes. But point being, it's asphalt.
No, I mean, I wouldn't buy Domino's because I don't like their pizza. But if they were like, here, you could donate $5 to our pothole fund, I'd be more likely to do that than want to pay taxes. I will pay taxes because I have to, and I'll go to jail if I don't. But if somebody was like, do this, and it's going to directly go to this, and it was proven it would go to that, I'd more likely do that than buy Domino's pizza. I think the best thing I saw from this, though, is don't they spray paint on the pothole they filled that it's Domino's who fixed it?
Yep.
It reminds me of the movie Idiocracy, and one of the things they did visually in Idiocracy to show that the culture was getting worse was to have logos on everything. But I would love if all of the crumbling infrastructure just had logos on it. Like, can you believe if somebody went into Detroit and built it up again and just put their logos on everything, how amazing it would be? Isn't that one of the reasons Vegas is awesome, is these hotels are built up and they slap their logos and their giant signs on everything?
Totally. And this is what really bothers me right, about the sort of reaction to this, which has been, I don't know, from the little circles I run in, we all think it's kind of cool and we get giddy about it, but the general reaction seems to be really net negative to this. One person at Video Dante tweeted, "Domino's unveiling a pothole fixing initiative is not good at all, because it is further privatizing the maintenance of something that should be a public good." Now let's dissect this for a moment. This doesn't cost the public anything. Domino's is doing this mostly, almost exclusively, as a marketing stunt. Fine. But some potholes will actually get fixed at no cost to the taxpayer, and that's not a good thing, because it privatizes the maintenance of something that should be a public good. But what good has that done if the potholes aren't actually fixed?
Daniel, this makes me want to go Adam Carolla so badly because of what you just said. My biggest thing is I just want the potholes to be fixed. I want the infrastructure to be good. And if somebody's going to do that and it's going to cost me no money, why do I give a shit if they do it right? Why do I care?
Why am I going to go to Twitter and be upset because it was done free and well?
Can you imagine if somebody comes into my apartment and unclogs my sink, and then I go, "You had no right. You had no right to come into my apartment and unclog my sink
for free." And
but we didn't take anything, and your sink works now. I don't care if my sink works. Well, what happened to we just want things to work right? And furthermore, isn't this in Domino's interest besides marketing? I mean, don't they want to drive on a road where they don't have to worry about the pizza flying all over when they hit a pothole?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And by the way, it's not as if, you know, Domino's is taking away this privilege from local communities. If local communities actually used the money they took in to fix the potholes, guess who wouldn't be fixing the potholes? Oh, right, Domino's wouldn't be, because there wouldn't be any to fix. So this is necessarily a failure of government that has brought about this marketing campaign. This reminds me of, did we talk about last week the Country Time legal aid? Did we talk about that? Where Country Time...
No, it's the same thing, though.
Country Time Lemonade is paying the fees and permits for children's lemonade stands. I like this new libertarian-esque marketing strategy from companies. I'm all on board. How many more companies can take over things the government has failed at? That'd be fantastic. William, any ideas there?
Yeah, I like the lemonade example. I think, though, and this is something you probably remember from your days out here, but... You know, I take the 405 every day to work up to Santa Monica. They're always changing the signs, the big posters, the giant building size signs for different movies or TV shows, everything else. I think that this unlocks a whole new marketing opportunity in LA because the roads are in rough shape in a lot of places. They don't have the weather potholes like you do in the Midwest, but you just have terrible infrastructure. There's roads that I drive on in Long Beach that so many semi-trucks have gone in that it's actually sunk in so deep that I'm afraid I'm going to scrape my undercarriage on the part of the road that isn't the ruts where the wheels for the trucks go. I think it'd be great advertising opportunity for companies. I think I can't wait to see the Expanse potholes being filled with cool graphics of the void ring thing or... you know, all those sorts of marketing opportunities, rather than spending millions of dollars putting giant obnoxious posters of Will Smith's latest flop movie on the side of the building. I could take my road rage out by driving over Will Smith on his head on a pothole that's been filled.
Racist. Here's one for you, William. How about Marvel just did this movie where Thanos snapped his fingers and half of the world's population disappeared. Why doesn't Marvel do something to fix the traffic in LA and say, drive in a post-Thanos world? Would that not create the ultimate hype in marketing for the sequel?
Yeah, I think that'd be
great.
They
could actually relieve the traffic some way, like free helicopter rides for people. That'd be fun.
Daniel, I'm going to find when you have a flat tire and patch that tire for free. Please don't sue me, okay? I'm just going to drive by your house, and I'm going to see that you can't drive that car because the tire's flat. I'm going to fix it for free. Please do not find me and sue me.
I'll try not to, although it's going to really piss me off.
Speaking of suing, how long before one of these potholes you know, deteriorates in some way, and then Domino's gets sued for tire damage.
Oh, I'm surprised it hasn't happened already.
Can you imagine if there's black ice on one of those potholes in the winter and somebody slides on
that
and crashes?
The paint made it 10% more slippery, so therefore Domino's Pizza is 9,500% responsible.
That math seems fishy to me, but I'm an English guy.
No, see, you base it based on how much money the person you're suing has, not the actual fault. That's how the judicial system works.
Oh, well, I don't understand any of that. So why don't we talk about something that I know a little bit more about, some art. Let's move on to The Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. Focused on.
Not to disappoint everyone out there, but I was not able to see The Incredibles 2 this weekend, and I don't believe anybody else was.
Nope.
No, I didn't either.
I will say that Midsider Michael saw it with his daughter, and he said they enjoyed it, so that seems to be an endorsement, and I don't know how it's doing money-wise yet. Has anyone looked that up to see how it's doing money-wise?
I'll look it up. But I will say that I do plan on seeing it this week, so we can have a review next week.
Yeah, definitely plan on reviewing it next week, because I'll be able to get to the theater as well. It's just been a tough week for it. It was just a bad week for it to be released.
Indeed. Incredibles
All right, so
2,
as always,
sorry, delivers record-shattering $180 million opening weekend. Topped the previous opening weekend for an animated film set 2 years ago by Finding Dory with $135 million. So it's doing
well.
So
it's the most successful opening weekend for a Pixar movie ever.
Yes.
All right, then. So it's doing well. So it'll be around for a while. So don't worry, a review will come in time. But as always, we're going to talk about some movies that are coming up. And if you want to see what trailers we're going to talk about before the show, before you listen to the show, so you don't have to pause it now and go watch now. We always post them on Thursday on themidside.com. I also share the link on the Facebook, the Twitter pages, and in our Discord channel. So you can go to any of those. You can pause it now, or you can just watch it on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday to know what trailers we are going to be hugging or tackling.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
The Grinch is another reboot of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, or another retelling. I don't know if it's a reboot because they don't keep these going. I mean, when is the, like, Grinch trilogy going to come out, right? So this one is animated. It's starring Benedict Cumberbatch, and it seems to do a little bit of what Tim Burton's Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory did, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory did, where it goes into the Grinch's past. There's a little hint of, like, his family denied him Christmas, which is why he hates Christmas. And the thing that really stuck out to me about this trailer is that it seems to be a complete deviation. There seems to be, like, the basic structure, the basic backbone of the story, but there seems to be a lot of new stuff in this. So it's almost like a complete reimagining of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And it's just called The Grinch. And I wanted to not like this because of the principle Daniel uses, which is, this isn't new. Give us new stuff, Hollywood. But I found myself enjoying this very much. And then it got me at the end. That punchline at the end where the beast is eating the whipped cream. And then the Grinch has the same reaction I do, which is, okay. Which is just kind of like, this is weird. I laughed hysterically. So despite the fact that this isn't new, I'm hugging.
Hug.
Daniel?
God damn it. It's animated and funny. I'm going to have to watch it. I'm going to have to watch it. So it's definitely a hug. I do like that it's not going to be just another retelling of How the Grinch Stole Christmas. Although the trilogy, you know, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, How the Grinch Stole Halloween, you eventually get down to, you know, How the Grinch Stole Arbor Day. And it's just not as interesting. Or Flag Day. But, so luckily we're not doing that. But I suspect if this movie does well, which it probably will, we'll see the Grinch in a lot more scenarios other than stealing Christmas. So I'm a little pessimistic about that part of it, but otherwise, I've gotta hug it.
Hug.
Daniel, if we keep doing these different scenarios of how the Grinch stole Christmas and so on and so forth, aren't we just going to end up back at the Nightmare Before Christmas? Because isn't that just a different version of the Grinch story?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I see how we get there. We'll do like a crossover universe. How the Grinch stole the Nightmare Before Christmas.
So Disney buys the Grinch. All right, William, what do you think?
Well, I agree with all of what you guys have said about do we really need another Grinch, but it looks creative. The animation looks decent. But for me, I don't need another Christmas movie that's a rehash of an old one. It doesn't really interest me. I didn't laugh at the joke at the end, so I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle!
How do you not laugh at that joke? Daniel, did you laugh?
I laughed.
Okay, I thought it was funny. Guess, that's my kind of humor. I don't know.
I have a different taste in humor.
Second trailer.
Dumbo is another retelling. It's part of Disney's live action remake kick right now. It's a live action version of the original Dumbo movie. It stars Colin Farrell as a one-armed man who did not kill Harrison Ford's wife. He is raising Dumbo with his children. And then there's Danny DeVito and Michael Keaton. There's not much in the way of plot in this movie. Or in this movie. I don't know about the movie. In this trailer. So there's not much to say about that. But here's the thing. As I mentioned, before Trailer Takedown, you can watch these trailers, and some of the Midsiders do reply. And Midsider Megan replied about this, and she made a really good point. And she said, you know, it's hard to, and I'm paraphrasing here, so Megan, don't like write me angrily. You misquoted me. It's hard to get excited about a Disney movie because everything is SJW with them now. And the question is, what's the angle here going to be? So I looked it up, and Danny DeVito owns a circus that Dumbo is in. And of course, Dumbo flies and makes the circus popular. And then Michael Keaton comes in and buys the circus just to get Dumbo in his own circus. And he's like this evil corporate business owner who really mistreats Dumbo. And Dumbo has to be saved from that. So that's how they've changed the story. So the problem I have is, based on this trailer, I probably would have hugged it because it looked pretty good and it looked pretty inoffensive, but using the Disney sucks recently principle and doing research based upon Midsider Megan reminding me of that, I have to tackle this.
Tackle.
I do not want to see this, and it makes me scared of what they're going to do to the Aladdin live action movie. Daniel?
I also have to tackle this. I do respect Tim Burton, and I think he will make a beautifully stylized film, but I can't imagine it's going to have a good message. You can't beat the original, really. So, tackle.
Tackle.
I do have to say, though, Daniel, as much as I agree that I love Tim Burton's aesthetic and I like that he is very individualistic in his filmmaking, who thought it was a good idea to bring him in to do a kid's movie? Like, didn't we learn our lesson from his Charlie and the Chocolate Factory? Hey, remember how he made that Willy Wonka tale, like, scary? What if we have him do the It's a Small World live-action movie?
Didn't he do an animated film? Frankenweenie or something like that, about a dead dog that comes back to life.
Well, yeah, and he produced The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Yeah,
so
scary stuff.
William?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm gonna tackle this. The reason why is more of what you guys were just mentioning. There seems to be a disconnect between the Dumbo story and this sort of like dark universe that this preview is in. It doesn't feel like a Disney thing, if that makes any sense. It doesn't feel like a fairy tale, morality tale sort of thing. And it seems like a huge disconnect. Can you imagine, like, Dumbo and Bambi are movies that I kind of put together as the same sort of style and theme. And Bambi was a little more, a little darker, right? But it still was bright and compatible for kids. Nothing in this preview looks very compatible for kids. It looks very, it's almost like a alternate universe, a Dumbo alternate universe, and it doesn't interest me, so I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle!
Yeah, I can't wait for the live-action Bambi reboot, where it's completely focused on how the murder of, what was it, Bambi's mother?
Yep.
Traumatizes him so much that he becomes a vigilante crime fighter who tries to kill super deer.
I assumed it would be turned into an anti-NRA movie. But
yeah, completely against the NRA.
Well, no, the NRA is who made him into the vigilante superhero that kills people. And we all know that Bambi does not kill people.
Yeah,
that's right.
But no, you're right, William. When I look at this trailer, now that you say that, it really it brought a concrete to my mind. And when you look at the Dumbo of the animated movie, he looks very happy and benevolent. But when you look at the Dumbo they find on the boxcar on the train, doesn't he look like very sad and traumatized?
Yeah, he looks like a victim.
He looks like they look like they found him on the train to Auschwitz. Is what they he looks like.
Okay.
Man, you let a Polish guy go to Auschwitz one time, and everything looks like Auschwitz.
That's what I told my girlfriend the other day. She called me a Nazi, and I go, you've been to Auschwitz now. Can you maybe not call the Polish guy a Nazi anymore?
Oh, man. They really pachyderm them in those trains.
Oh.
Yeah, I went there.
Final trailer.
First Man is a much brighter direction for this trailer takedown to go.
Thank God.
So First Man is the next movie directed by Damien Chazelle and starring Ryan Gosling. And it's about the journey for Neil Armstrong to first walk on the moon. Now, gentlemen, we are entering into dangerous territory with Damien Chazelle here. And what I mean by this is I think we are walking into objective-ish territory again. Now, Midsider Mark recently retweeted an article about how people like Ankar Gatte from ARI were saying The Incredibles is not actually objectivist because, for instance, Syndrome is an effective villain in the sense that he is capable and intelligent. And, you know, Ayn Rand would never have written a villain who actually was capable and intelligent of doing things. Although
Ellsworth Tui?
My response.
Yeah, Ellsworth
yeah that was yeah. exactly what I was just going to say.
Quintessentially a capable, intelligent villain. That's what makes him compelling. He fails and
right,
has
and
to
that's
fail,
exact...
but so does Syndrome.
Right, and that was exactly what my thought was when I read that quote from Ankar Gatte. But a lot of objectivists would say that unless you have this specific worldview of Ayn Rand, then it's not an objectivist type movie. But when you look at Chazelle and you look at all the work he's done, and now he's doing one about how miraculous and amazing and a sense of achievement it was that man's able to walk on the moon, that reminds me of what was the essay that Rand wrote, Daniel?
Apollo and Dionysus.
Apollo and Dionysus. So it's really tough for me here. This is his third film, and it gives me a lot of hope here, and it makes me wonder things about him, but I don't want to go down that same road. But still, as for the trailer itself, it's amazing. And from his previous work, I have to have high hopes for this. This has to be a hug.
Hug.
Daniel?
So this whole thing about whether or not a movie is objectivist or not, to me, is a nonsensical debate. The point is, does it have themes that align with the philosophy, or does it not? Of course, Brad Bird's not an objectivist, so it's not a quote-unquote objectivist movie. Fine, I don't care. All the themes in the film line up with the principles of objectivism, and thus, I can doubly enjoy the film. It's not only a good film, but it's a moral film. I think the same goes
right,
for a lot of
the same...
Damien Chazelle's work. Chazelle's work.
Well, and Zack Snyder, Batman vs. Superman, right? It's not an objectivist movie, but the themes of this is my world, you are my world, maybe it's a quote-unquote sacrifice, but that's a rightly understood sacrifice.
Well, if... Right. Misnamed, rightly understood action. There we go.
Right.
So, you know, come out and, you know, crap on The Incredibles. Like, don't you have better things to write about? Ankar, you're a smart guy. Can you turn your brain towards something else, please? And not crap on things that are actually good for the sake that it's not objectivist. Jesus. Okay. I'm just getting my Objectivist card revoked today outright. They are returning my membership dues.
Well, I think, Daniel, it's an interesting discussion to have, because what ends up happening to people like Brad Bird and Snyder and probably Chazelle eventually, we started to see the backlash with La La Land, right, and it will get worse, is you have the Objectivists attacking because it's not really Objectivist, but then you have everyone else attacking it because it has the themes of individualism and selfishness and productiveness in it. So then you end up with no allies for these wonderful artists.
Yeah. Dumb. So, yeah, same essentially goes for this movie, which is just a stunning trailer in almost every regard. The opening scene of the rocket blast off on Neil Armstrong's face was just moving in the first 10 seconds. I just, Damien Chazelle is turning out to be a master filmmaker. And if he does it three times in a row, there'll be no doubt that these are the kind of themes that he wants to explore. Human achievement, human greatness, individualism, individual greatness, etc. So this is the biggest hug in a long time for a movie.
Hug.
William?
I'm definitely hugging this. SpaceX alumni, so this is right up my alley. There's rockets. But I agree with you guys. I think you can even see it in they set up some of the adversity, right? You have people saying, oh, you're just being boys, and you see the dangerousness, right, the fire. You see the adversity right away, too, in the trailer. I think this is set up to be good. I'm not going to have super high expectations. But I'm definitely eagerly awaiting this movie. Hug.
Hug.
It's too late for the high expectations. Whiplash was tremendous. La La Land was even better. And then this trailer was released. I can't lower my expectations. I can't. How could I lower my... How are you lowering your expectations?
Because Hollywood. I know what they can do to a good script.
Touché.
I mean, I guess we would have to have questions about the production company and how much of the budget was and everything. I think the larger a budget gets nowadays, the more you worry about.
Well, and we don't know about the marketing too, right? There's definitely not enough women and minorities and disabled people in this trailer. So the marketing could turn very fast.
Well, that's true. Although I would think in today's day and age, if they had the opportunity to market something based upon that. Like, what did we see with the Mary Shelley trailer?
Yeah.
Where it was all super feminist. I think they would push that if they could. So the fact that they pushed this in this way makes me think they had no other way to push it.
We'll see. When does this come out? I forget.
Not soon enough. I don't know. I have no idea.
I'll look it up while you're transitioning.
Yeah. Well, when we're talking about people who don't have any allies and probably need someone on their side right now, I think Dennis Rodman is someone who might be important to talk about, especially because of the week he just had. So let's do it. Let's do another round of good Kanye.
I miss the old Kanye. Straight from the gold Kanye. Chop up the soul Kanye. Set on his goals Kanye. I hate the new Kanye. The bad mood Kanye. The always rude Kanye. Spazzing the news.
If you were paying attention to the interwebs at all in North Korea this past week, you saw that one of the biggest players in this whole drama, a former Chicago Bull, not actually Michael Jordan, it was Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman of all people. And he went through several things. So I have three things here. Two are tweets from him. One is an interview, a video interview he did. And I want to throw it to my co-hosts here. And I'm going to talk about each of them. And I'm going to say, and you're going to say, whether he was a good Kanye or a bad Kanye. And this is, of course, referring to the idea that Kanye is someone who is all over the place, right? Sometimes he's really great and sometimes he's really terrible. So the whole point is we're showing that people are mixed in this world, especially in this world. So sometimes good people do bad things and sometimes bad people do good things. So let's start from the beginning here. This is a retweet he had from this past week. And the tweet he's retweeting is a news source, and it says, Dennis Rodman played b-ball with Kim Jong-un. And he retweeted and he said, we played horse. So, Daniel and William, is it a good Kanye or bad Kanye that Dennis Rodman played horse with Kim Jong-un?
So, unlike Trump, Rodman has no diplomatic abilities in the sense that he can't officially act for the United States government. And, you know, thus, I'm not sure what he's accomplishing other than playing basketball with a guy who's killed thousands of his own people. So, bad Kanye.
William?
Yeah, we talked about the difference between quote-unquote legitimizing, whatever that means, and giving moral sanction. I think playing a game of horse while the person you're playing against is literally starving millions of people is definitely a bad Kanye.
I agree with you guys that it's bad Kanye, but I wish there's a way to give an accidental good Kanye, because this is Kim Jong-un's perception of America now, is Dennis Rodman. And he's like, oh, man, I kind of like this. Like, this had to have helped to get Trump in the same room as Kim Jong-un, because Dennis Rodman was on The Celebrity Apprentice run by Donald Trump. Of course, I believe Dennis Rodman was also on Celebrity Rehab. So this is how our world is being controlled right now. This is how our world is being run right now by people who were on Celebrity Apprentice and Celebrity Rehab.
Reality television is now just reality.
I liked Adam Carolla's take on this, which is he had nothing to say about the goodness or badness of it. He said essentially, wait a minute. If you're a 5-foot-nothing squatty Korean dictator, do you really want photo ops standing next to a 7-foot-tall center in the NBA? Like, is that really the optics you want? I thought that was an amusing take on it all.
Well, if that doesn't show that Kim Jong-un has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah.
All right. Next, we have another tweet here. Just arrived to Singapore for the historical summit. Looking forward to POTUS having incredible success that the whole world will benefit by. Thank you at Potcoin for supporting my mission. Then a bunch of hashtags. And he, of course, is referring to the fact that he showed up wearing a MAGA hat, Make America Great Again, and then a cryptocurrency shirt called Potcoin. What the hell? William, go first. What the hell is Potcoin? Is this good that Rodman's wearing?
I have no idea what Potcoin is, but there are so many cryptocurrencies now that it doesn't surprise me that there's a cryptocurrency to standardize payment for legalized cannabis. I think it's great. So Potcoin is the thing. I think this is bad Kanye. You're using, I guess, I have a hard time understanding how he couldn't afford to just go out himself, but he got a sponsor to go and take advantage of a dictator having a meeting with the president. I think it's so twisted and weird and kind of icky. So definitely bad Kanye.
Potcoin is the first digital currency created to facilitate transactions within the legalized cannabis industry. Potcoin is community-based, a truly decentralized, autonomous organization where the community members determine their level of involvement, commitment, and development. Justin, I know you're going to rush to sign up, so you can do that over at potcoin.com. This podcast is not sponsored by potcoin.com.
By Edgecoin. There isn't an Edgecoin, but there should be.
A cryptocurrency backed by doing literally nothing. Edgecoin.
Hey.
How can you get a currency backed by not having fun?
Hey.
Okay.
It's called the U.S. dollar.
Zing. Okay. I'm going to have to go with good Kanye. And I guess the only reason I say that is, it's a nice tweet. It's weird that he's there. That is a little weird to me, but... if he's going to sort of be a cheerleader for the peace negotiations, I guess I'm fine with that. It's sort of meh Kanye, but I'll turn it up to good Kanye.
I'm also going to go with good Kanye because, oh my God, if you need a better example of farce in our culture, is it not the image of, I was going to say Donald Trump, is it not the image of Dennis Rodman at these peace meetings wearing a t-shirt, right? He didn't even dress up. He wore a t-shirt and warm-up pants. And then the t-shirt says Potcoin, and then he has a Make America Great hat again. You know what, Dennis Rodman? You always let your freak flag fly. Keep doing it. You are you. I appreciate that. And for that, you get a good Kanye.
Side story here. After the Capitals won the Stanley Cup, going into work the next day and seeing literally everyone in the city wearing red hats, I actually had to ask a coworker if, like, the Republican National Committee was in town or something, why everyone was wearing the MAGA hats around. Like, no, it's Capitals hats.
Oh, man.
Like, oh. I've been so conditioned by the red hat to just assume it's a MAGA hat. Yeah.
That's like the most, as awesome. A hockey fan, that's like the most DC thing. I hate the Capitals. I hate the way the Capitals fans are. Like, you know, when Detroit is running up to a Stanley Cup victory, you see Red Wings shit everywhere and everyone knows what's going on, but not in DC. In DC, everyone's oblivious.
Nope. I thought they were all MAGA hats.
I mean, is that any different than LA Kings fans, William?
Yeah, I think that's true. But then once the Kings win, then everyone is suddenly Kings fans and you see Kings stuff everywhere. It's weird. In DC, I doubt in DC it's the same way. It's not like you're going to see for months and months after, all of a sudden, random Capitals flags out on houses that never had any sort of like sports stuff going on before.
Sorry, we're pretty busy here running the rest of the world.
Dictator.
Then you don't get a sports team.
This is
why did you have to beat Vegas? I really wanted Vegas to win. I really did.
I just so do not care that I don't know. I just thought it was amusing that I was so oblivious.
Vegas was an expansion team, though.
Yeah.
How awesome would it have been if an expansion team bought the Stanley Cup in their first year? How mad would people have gotten about that?
Pretty mad.
And would there have been a better city for to have done that than Vegas?
No, that's pretty much the most Vegas thing Vegas could have done.
Yeah, would have been awesome.
I expect the Raiders will win the Super Bowl the year they go to Las Vegas.
That's okay with me. As long as Tom Brady's retired, they can have it. All right, moving on. We have a video. And in this video, as the headline says, Dennis Rodman crying wearing MAGA hat. I believe in North Korea. It is a great day. So hopefully, gentlemen, you guys watch this video because I want to know what you think of this video. Daniel?
I watched the video. It's amazing. But tell me, it's news when Rodman's not crying. Doesn't he cry all the time about just about everything? He's a crier. That Rodman.
I think it has to do with his body being put through the stress of addiction, maybe.
Yeah, probably. So, crying on TV, that's interesting. Potcoin shirt on TV, MAGA hat on TV, nose ring on TV. All very interesting.
Dyed hair, right?
I think just because, you know, save the crying for at home, I'm going to go with bad Kanye.
William? I thought this was hilarious. I mean, he genuinely feels like he's done something to make this happen. And as cringeworthy as that is, it is definitely good Kanye.
I agree, cringeworthy, but I also appreciate the man showing his passion. And again, I just like the fact that as insane and as much of an addict as Dennis Rodman is, he tries to do better. He tries to do good. And I think he was sincere in this video, and you don't see that a lot in these.
That's very true. That's why you got the good Kanye
in these media appearances. All right. Well, that's a fuck. You took my punchline. Whatever. What are your final scores?
I have two bad Kanyes, one good Kanye. So in this instance, it's a bad Kanye.
I too have two bad Kanyes and one good Kanye. So it's bad Kanye.
Ah. I have two good and one bad. So by a score of 2-1, Dennis Rodman this week was a bad Kanye. That brings us to the end of our episode. What did we learn this trip? Daniel?
Well, I learned that saying someone is a good or bad Kanye is eventually going to turn into a race thing. So we need some white people cancel up in the this segment. Let's find a white person to do this with next time. I'm just saying.
Well, I was going to do Roseanne, but then what's her name? Samantha Bee decided to commit career suicide in the same week. And so it became a news story rather than just Roseanne being insane.
Yeah. Fair enough.
William?
Well, I learned this week, rather than call any diversity and inclusion offices by that name, I will forever now refer to them as the Office of Discrimination.
There you go. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that Disney may be beyond hope, because we talked about what they did to Iron Man and how they reinforced that business dichotomy, you know, the business versus ethics false dichotomy. And then we talked about what happened with the reboot or the reimagining, the live action reimagining of Dumbo as a Holocaust victim.
Well, if you want to learn something this week, you can learn that First Man is coming out on October 12th. So mark your calendars now for that opening weekend. Also, thanks so much for tuning in, especially if you disagreed with us. We like this to be a place where we can have disagreement, and it's not an echo chamber of everyone thinking the same thing. So disagreement is good as long as
it's respectful
and rational.
Daniel.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be the one to piss everyone off, and now you're making it look like we're all getting on the same page here.
It was funny that I think we all thought we were going to be the one to take the contrary stance this week and be pro-negotiation.
It's like when you're watching a season of Survivor and all three people at the same time have the idea to try and stab the other one in the back at the same time, and they all do it, and they're like, shit, we all just fucked each other at the same time. How does this work?
Yeah, the sheer physics of that alone are just mind-boggling. But I'm sure you can find that on Pornhub if you're into that kind of thing. So thanks for tuning in. Is that even a phrase anymore? Tuning in? My God. Thanks for listening.
What would it be instead?
Thanks for listening. Thanks for streaming? Downloading. Thanks for streaming. Thanks for
subscribing.
For ear-podding. All those things. Air-budding. Air-podding. All the words of air, ear, and pod combined.
Air budding sounds like you're trying to pretend to be the dog from the series of movies.
True. But you can't dunk like Air Bud dunked. So, if you enjoyed your trip
Dennis
here,
Rodman, Ken. Good Rodman. Good Rodman. Good Kanye.
Very good Rodman. Here's a treat. It's a popcorn. You can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play and get the episodes delivered to you the moment they're released on the listening device of your choice. While you're there, 5-star reviews help us move up the ranks so we can finally surpass our arch rival, Welcome to Night Vale. Don't even know what that show is. Not going to bother to learn. I'm going to go to my grave not knowing what that show is. So if you don't want to do that, you can go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes of the show going way back there. Years and years and years. You can listen to the Snyder series. You can listen to the first couple episodes of, or the first episode. Did we do two of Nolan Notes? We did two. We've done two of Nolan Notes.
Yes. Yes.
And all that jazz. You can go to themidside.com/store and get a false dichotomy bro shirt. Every time William says it, a little alarm should go off. Like a little, like Pee Wee's Playhouse when someone said the word of the day. That'd be great. And you can also go to patreon.com/themidside and help us financially by choosing to give us a few bucks every time we create a piece of content. It helps us keep the lights on. I love my lights. I have lots of them on in the basement where I'm recording here, and I need more of them. So you can help us every time we create a piece of content. You choose to give us a few bucks, a couple pennies, whatever it is you can afford, and you only pay when we create content, not when we take weeks off. But also, there's Patreon-exclusive content, such as our recent review of Solo and a few other movies on there. And also, Justin, I believe, released the very first episode of Welcome to the Midside ever from years and years ago during the Lost season. So you can get that as Patreon-exclusive subscribers. You can go to the Discord channel we have now and sign up to do some discussion. There's general discussion. There's also Patreon-only discussion. So do that. I'll probably do that someday as well. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. We appreciate the libertarians out there. For once, we actually agree with you on something, and that would be this foreign policy instance only. Don't get used to it. And also, tell a friend about the show. If you have no money, that's fine. You don't want to go to Discord because you're suspicious of the internet. We understand. But you have friends, right? Or at least you have... If you don't have friends, you have other human beings you interact with in some capacity. Tell them about the show. Say, hey, person who I sit next to at work, I think Steve, there's this podcast I listen to named Welcome to the Midside. You should download it on iTunes because I know, based on the little pop Funko figurine on your desk, you also like Zack Snyder. See what I did there? I just gave you a whole conversation to have with Steve. Take that, adapt it for your own purposes, and tell a friend. It'll be glorious. Until next time, folks, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelinski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
I'm just really confused at how Steve seems to have all the same interests that we do.
Maybe his name should have been Chad.
Oh, that's too much incel culture there.